This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Going to have a good day as we always do aboard the mothership. We thank you for being part of that good day. Happy Thursday. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. With every score change during Super Bowl 55, someone wins $50,000 in the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Coming up this hour here on the DA Show. Well, we've got such a good show. During all of the headlines, Andrew Bogish is playing Super Dave's drop from yesterday's Winthrop basketball game. Super Dave and his partner Mike Pacheco just absolutely crushed it, hit it out of the park using all of our drops. So you got to stick around for that because they had no fear, absolutely no fear doing all of our drops. In 20 minutes also, Deshaun Watson, would he accept a trade to the New York Jets? And in 40 minutes, Mahomes' status gets a flip-flop for the AFC Championship game yesterday. All of that coming up this hour on the show. 1 hour from now, Steve Tasker is going to join us. But I want to do a little history here, NFL history, which you guys know that I love to do. Mraz, let's go back to 1993 because Chiefs and Bills, the last time the Bills were in this spot, the AFC title game, was 1993. And before this Patrick Mahomes run, that was the last time the Chiefs were in the AFC title game. So there's a lot of good vibes from the early 90s bubbling up in Kansas City this weekend. In 1993, what were you doing?
1993, that summer, I learned how to swim at 6 years old on my first ever trip to Florida. And I proceeded, I remember distinctly, for these are the first NFL playoffs, I actually remember sitting on the couch with my father. And in fact, I could tell you, I remember I was started to be allowed to reach my own hand into potato chips that January as well.
Now, that's interesting. You were not allowed to take your own potato chips until the age of six. You remember having your hand slapped away?
Well, yes, because I was a young, portly kid. But if you remember, DA, that year, the Giants had a pretty magical year themselves. So I remember Giants-Vikings wildcard weekend. And it's distinctly remembered, as my parents have always joked around since, the 1993 Giants playoffs is where I became a real pig because I learned how to feed myself out of a chip bag.
Interesting, yes. The 93 Giants had a bit of a magical run. After Parcells had retired after the 1990 Super Bowl, they went 8-8 and 6-10 with the disaster known as Ray Handley. They brought in Dan Reeves, who had been fired in Denver for being unable to get over the hump for the Broncos, and he immediately restored solid respectability to the Giants, and they nearly nabbed the number one seed of the NFC. We'll talk more about that coming up here. So here was the world in 1993, okay? I was a 14-year-old. I think that was ninth grade for me, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Ninth grade. Yeah, 1993, 14-year-old DA. Here is what is happening in the world in 1993, okay? The big hit song is Mariah Carey's Dream Lover. Bum, ba, da, 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 da. Ooh, baby, baby. Remember that song?
I do remember that song. I'm a big Mariah Carey fan, and I love playing a 90s station on my Sirius XM from time to time, and that comes on often.
Mm-hmm. Dream Lover, the number one song that year. The number one movie that year, Jurassic Park 1.
Is that right?
That is right.
I would have thought Jurassic Park was more of like a 96, 97. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, 93, the first Jurassic Park. This might stir some memories here for some of our listeners. In 1993 for the Super Bowl, this was the Cowboys and Bills, the second one. The game was on CBS, I believe. Yes, it was on CBS. At that time, In Living Color was one of the biggest shows on TV. Of course, it had launched the career of the Wayans brothers, Damon Wayans, Jim Carrey, etc. Fox was not a NFL rights holder. So they tried to go rogue during Super Bowl halftime. During halftime, they put on an In Living Color special. It was synced up live with the moment that they went to commercial break for halftime, and then they wrapped it up so that viewers could flip back over. So that really doesn't happen much anymore for the networks. You might see that on cable. I don't know. I feel like there's like a puppy bowl that goes on, like the Animal Planet or something
and
that.
And MTV with Beavis and Butthead forever.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen anymore either.
No. But that was back in the day. That was what they did at halftime.
And what's amazing is, well, maybe that was 92. Either way, it changed everything because once Fox did this, the next year, I think the next year was 93, the NFL brought in Michael Jackson for the halftime so that people couldn't flip away from the halftime show. So that changed how dramatic and huge and star-studded the halftime shows then became. Interesting, right?
I did not realize that's what made the turn.
That's what made the turn. Also, if you're just wondering what was happening in sports at that time, the Toronto Blue Jays were back-to-back World Series champions. Of course, the last time they'd won the World Series. In the NBA, that was the third championship of Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls, of the first three-peat, beating Charles Barkley and the Phoenix Suns in that classic. In 1993, Merez, the Montreal Canadiens are the Stanley Cup champions. Right. As we famously know, the last amazing Canadian Stanley Cup.
Amazing. Beating Wayne Gretzky and the Kings. Wayne Gretzky had gotten the Kings to the Stanley Cup that year.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's the Marty McSorley curved stick controversy. How about this as well? You'd be very proud of Dave Thomas. I know that you're a big Dave Thomas fan, the founder of Wendy's, the late,
yes,
great Dave Thomas. In 1993, he went back to high school to get his GED because he was worried that his success running the Wendy's franchises as a high school dropout might convince other teenagers to quit school.
Wow, so me and Dave Thomas actually had a lot in common. Very uneducated and backed our way into some success. And back then, D.A., I remember distinctly being a big fan of around 93, 94 is the time I learned to dip a French fry in a Frosty in the yellow-labeled Wendy's as well.
And is that not a game changer when you realize the French fry and the Frosty trick?
Oh, you kidding me? It was like, wait a minute now, wait a minute. This isn't ketchup, but it's still delicious.
Now, wait a minute. Ice cream, fried potatoes. This works.
And I've often made the jokes about the 2000s and the ranch dressing boom. Think about it. Now you might do a little French fry and ranch dressing. Before that, you were dipping your French fries in Frosties. It was a crazy time.
It was a crazy
now,
time.
Now, wait a minute.
Crazy. You might not remember this, but Chevy Chase had his ill-fated Chevy Chase talk show, which lasted 6 weeks.
I do.
Billy Joel's River of Dreams, his last original album, came out in 1993. And the cover of that album was painted by his wife at the time, Christy Brinkley. It was named the best album cover of the year by Rolling Stone.
That's a nice touch. Good job by Christy. I'm sure Billy obviously showed he appreciated it.
The 1993, the first year of Coachella, when the band Pearl Jam boycotted Ticketmaster for high prices. And so upon the boycott, they started this renegade music festival called Coachella.
Wow. I'm sure there was no weed smoke there at all.
Mm-hmm. Also, Mattel introduced a new Ken for Ken and Barbie, and it was Earring Magic Ken, where Ken wore blonde highlights, a purple shirt, a lavender vest, a necklace with a charm, and an earring in his left ear. I don't remember this.
I don't either, but I'm sure a lot of parents were thrilled to buy it.
And from a sports standpoint, this was the year of Jim Abbott's dramatic no-hitter, which we talked about over the summer, how incredible that moment really is in history, that somebody with one hand could pitch not only in Major League Baseball regularly as a starter, but he threw a no-hitter. Incredible.
Right. I could also tell you that 10 days after this AFC title game, first time I had a whole cotton candy stick to myself and got it all over myself and then basically had to shower an hour and a half later. It was ridiculous.
It is just remarkable how you have so many very specific benchmarks in your life marked by food, and you know the year. Like 1993 was a huge food year for you. You were allowed to reach into the potato chip bowl for the first time yourself.
Right.
You found French fries dipped in Frosties.
Uh-huh.
And what was the one you just said?
This is cotton candy. I ate the whole cotton candy myself. I bet you if you looked up the date, this is how crazy I am. If you looked up February 2nd, 1994, you will see the Rangers play the Islanders at Madison Square Garden. Adam Graves scored 3 goals. I sat in the upper deck with my dad. He allowed me to get cotton candy, and I was covered in it at 7 years old, covered in it. Embarrassing train ride home, and my mother didn't understand why I had to be thrown into a shower when I got home. Just stickiness everywhere. 10 days after this AFC title game.
Here is how the NFL looked in 1993. The Bills and the Oilers were the best teams in the AFC. They were both 12-4. Only the Bills would end up in the AFC Championship game because Joe Montana did what Joe Montana does. The Chiefs that year had won the AFC West at 11-5. They had to go on the road in the divisional round to Houston. The Oilers were the big favorites. It looked like we were going to get a rematch of the Frank Reich game, Bills Oilers in the AFC title game, and instead Montana goes to Houston, defeats the Oilers, and that sends them to the AFC championship game against the reigning three-time AFC champion Buffalo Bills. In the NFC, it was a down year. The Cowboys ended up at 12-4. They were trying to repeat. The second best team of the NFC was the Giants, who finished 11-5. This is the famous Emmitt Smith Week 17 game where the separated shoulder at the Meadowlands. The winner of this game is going to have home field advantage in the NFC, the one seed. The loser is going to be a wild card. It's crazy that I don't know if that's ever happened other than that game. That's what was on the line on that day. Emmitt Smith with one shoulder guts his way through the game. The Cowboys end up winning. The Cowboys are the one seed. The Giants are the wild card. The Giants beat the Vikings wild card weekend, but then go to San Francisco divisional round and famously lose 44-3 in Phil Simms and LT's final games. That year, the Lions win the NFC Central. Again, this was a time where the Lions made the playoffs regularly because of Barry Sanders. So this brings us to the AFC Championship game. In the NFC, it was a classic again, Niners and Cowboys for the second year in a row. In the AFC, it was the Bills and the Chiefs. We had Tim Grunhard join us yesterday on the show. Grunny was the center for the Chiefs throughout the 1990s, and this was the first year of Joe Montana coming to Kansas City after the Niners had decided we are going with Steve Young. Here was Grunny reflecting back on the type of Brady-esque aura that Montana originally had in KC.
Well, a little bit what Brady did for Tampa, and you know, I talked a little bit about that. When Brady moved over to Tampa, some people called and said, hey, well, you know, what did Joe Montana do? What can we expect Brady to do? He brought, he brought a legitimate quarterback with a legitimate chance to give you an opportunity to win. Joe Montana came in with a swagger, came in with confidence, and when he walked into the room, y'all felt like you had an opportunity to win any game that he was in there because of just his experience and the way he carried himself and the way the guy played. And I think you see a little bit of that with Brady now too. So when we walked into Buffalo in that AFC Championship game, we felt we had every chance to win that game, and it just didn't work out.
Didn't work out as the Bills were able to push ahead in the second quarter. It was a tight game of the first quarter, 7-6 after one. Thurman Thomas scores to make it 14-6, and then the Bills open it up at 20-6. In this game, though, Joe Montana suffers a concussion. He gets hit hard, and the Chiefs just, they lose Montana, and then the game gets away from them. It ends up at 30-13, and the Chiefs, it would take decades to get back to the AFC title game. And this, at this point in time, is an amazing moment of resilience for the Bills, because the Bills have now lost three Super Bowls in a row. Three Super Bowls in a row, and they just keep coming back for more. And they end up with the best record of the AFC. And at that time, I think most of us remember, no offense, Bills fans, we did not want to see you in the Super Bowl anymore. You had lost in 1990 on the Scott Norwood kick. Great, young team, fun, they'll be back. You get back in 1991, you lose way worse to Washington. And now it's suddenly like, okay, now they're losers. By 1992, you get back again. This was probably the worst of the four teams because Jim Kelly was very much injured. That's why Frank Reich comes to that game or plays that game for the Oilers, or against the Oilers, rather. They get to the Super Bowl. They lose 52-17 to the Cowboys. By 93, nobody wants them there. I know I didn't. No offense, but I did not want to see you guys get your butts handed to you again in the Super Bowl. It felt like, oh man, we got Joe Montana for the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl. Let's do that. And so America's largely rooting for the Chiefs in the AFC title game, and yet it's the Bills yet again showing up. And in the Super Bowl, the Bills actually have a lead at halftime. This is a really earnest, good, solid effort by a team that simply will not die, but in the second half, Emmitt Smith runs wild, collects the MVP. The Cowboys have their second championship, and the Bills have four consecutive Super Bowl losses. That was their final great win of that window of the dynasty in the AFC, was the 1993 AFC Championship game. We go back to the future coming up this Sunday with Chiefs and Bills again in the AFC title game and a chance to go to Super Bowl 55. We're going to have Marv Levy on Sunday Morning Football this weekend, and I'm really excited because, while at the time I did not want to see Buffalo in a fourth consecutive Super Bowl, as history wears on and we have some space from those moments, it becomes more remarkable to me that any team could ever deal with that type of heartbreak and keep coming back for more. We see a team lose a Super Bowl, and they're out of the playoffs the next year. Regularly, we see this. If you lose the Super Bowl, you don't make the playoffs. It happened to the 49ers this year. A lot of that was injuries. But we've seen just this Super Bowl hangover. You lose a Super Bowl, you don't go back to the Super Bowl. You miss the playoffs. And Buffalo went time and time again, and it didn't matter how many times they were embarrassed, how many times they were humiliated, how many people rooting against them, how much emotional damage that happened, they just kept coming back for more. And the resiliency of that team 90 through 93 is perhaps the most remarkable feat of resiliency in NFL history. 855-212-4CBS or on Twitter, DA on CBS. When we return, Deshaun Watson, would he be open to a trade to the New York Jets? One all-pro NFL corner says he should do it. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day with DA.
Bum, ba, da, dun, 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 dun. Ooh, baby, baby.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
That was for licensing purposes. Sunday on CBS, a spot in Super Bowl 55 is the prize when the Bills take on the Chiefs. In the AFC Championship game, we get you set for the game starting at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, with JB and the guys on the NFL today. The AFC Championship game is Sunday on CBS. We appreciate you being with us on a fine Thursday around here. Coming up, Andrew Bogish with his headlines is must-listen-to radio today because he is playing the clip from Winthrop basketball yesterday's game against Presbyterian as the voice of the Eagles, Super Dave Friedman, used our drops on the show because he lost a bet. And bravo for paying up on the bet and overpaying. We'll hear those clips coming up in just a few minutes. But first, Richard Sherman says that Deshaun Watson should go to New York and be a Jet. Now, I said this yesterday, I'll say it again, I don't think the Texans should be in the market of trading Deshaun Watson. I really don't. I've seen the Twitter mashups and Instagram mockups that you have, him in a Dolphins jersey, him in a Jets jersey, and it's fun to speculate and to imagine. This will be one of the stupidest trades in NFL history. If the Texans trade away a 25-year-old natural-born leader who does everything right in the locker room and the community for draft picks, it'll be the Herschel Walker trade. Okay? But reverse. You'll get the draft picks, and you won't build the dynasty, and you'll trade away the big player, and the player won't end up falling on his face. He'll build that franchise into a winner. So it's actually nothing like the Herschel Walker trade. It's such a dumb outcome of this because it is so avoidable. If you're Deshaun Watson and you're frustrated by the health of the organization, by the direction of the organization, by the warring factions of the organization, you know what the organization should do? Fire the team chaplain. It's the easy decision. Jockeying Jack. This guy's riding the owner, Cal McNair, to save his own butt. Riding Cal McNair to hire his friend Nick Caserio so that he won't get fired. Fire jockey Jack Easterby, and you'll immediately show Deshaun Watson, we're serious, we mean business. Sit down with Watson, say this is what we did, this is our mistakes, this is how we'll rectify them, we want you here. You don't trade a franchise quarterback at 25 years old. There's not a flaw to Deshaun Watson. You don't trade that guy. But Adam Schefter reports that there's growing sentiment that Deshaun Watson has played his last game for the Houston Texans. And so Richard Sherman, who is, of course, a veteran in the NFL and has played for both the Seahawks and the Niners, said that he thinks Richard Sherman should go to New York and play for his old defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh. He said Deshaun Watson should get to the Jets, quote, as quickly as possible. He told the Chris Collinsworth podcast as a co-host, I'd head right now to New York to the Jets. And he was talking about they've got a decent offensive line. They'd have to add some offensive weapons, but they've got money in free agency. And Richard Sherman with a very funny line, I'd be out of there on the first thing smoking. So I guess that means plane, train, or automobile, or rocket ship. So it's kind of weird, don't you think, Mraz, for anybody that's been in the NFL for any amount of time to say, I'd run to New York. Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause, so he can argue or angle for wherever he wants to go. If he does not want to go to a place that another team has a bounty for him, he could say, I'm not going to waive my no trade clause. And so he can angle where he wants to go. If he wants to go to New York, he could say, I'll only waive it for the Jets, and you got to take their offer. I find it surprising, though, after the Jets' near decade of ineptitude, that anybody around the NFL would say, I would run to the Jets. How about you?
Yeah, I find this weird on a number of levels. Number one, just the idea that it is the Jets. And I do think that it was it's an appealing place because if you are great in New York and win a Super Bowl with the Jets, you will be idolized forever, and I understand that. But that's kind of the case in a lot of places. You could make that case in Detroit as well, but it would be great for marketing and all of that. So it is just bizarre because what kind of world are we living in where people want to be New York Jets? What I also find bizarre is Richard Sherman's not retired, and it just seems a little weird for somebody who's a current player to be commenting on the star and saying he should be running to this place that isn't the team he's currently playing for either. That part of it I find very strange, too.
Do you think that it's irresponsible for a current player in the NFL, Richard Sherman still playing, to be telling other current yes. players you should be trying to basically shoot your way out of town?
Yeah, I think part of it is irresponsible because, right, like when another guy is in contract negotiations on your own team and you're asked about it as a teammate, what is the main prevailing thought? Oh, you don't talk about somebody else's money. You don't talk about somebody else's situation. But because Richard Sherman isn't currently Deshaun Watson's teammate and isn't currently saying he should come play for his own team, it's like he's just commenting where I thought that was a big no-no for players. Don't comment on other guys' situations and basically tell them where they should go, what they should be doing. Don't touch their money. I do find that a little out of place from Richard Sherman. I really do.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it's because that Richard Sherman is already angling for an analyst job. And we've now seen this. This is kind of a modern trend of the NFL and other sports as well. But guys toward the end of their careers realize, let me open up. Let me do more with the media. Let me do weekly interview sessions. Let me do weekly radio shows. Let me do a podcast. He's doing a podcast with Chris Collinsworth that he knows is going to be well downloaded and listened to. And he's going to use that as a jumping off point for when he retires to land one of these studio shows, NFL Network, etc. Joe Thomas did it. Steve Smith did it. A lot of these guys start really doing a lot of media in their final 2 years of their careers. They realize the writing's on the wall. So Richard Sherman's walking this line of already being the media or trying to be, and that's how you get attention. You know, it's like do really good interviews or be a little outlandish when you're still playing when it matters, and then you'll parlay that into a job. So I agree. He's in a murky gray zone right now, and I think as a current player, talking about another current player should leave, go there, is a little weird and awkward. I also think, look, the Jets aren't a good job yet. They're not a good position yet, okay? Robert Saleh might be a good head coach, and I like the hire. And the Jets might spend this money well, and they might use the draft picks well. But we don't know that. And so Deshaun Watson running to the Jets right now, I wouldn't say you should run there more than stay in Houston. I agree the Texan situation's a disaster. But the Jets have also been a disaster for a decade. And, let's say outside of the two Rex Ryan years, probably bordering on disaster for most of the last 30 to 40 years. I mean, there's a few good Herm Edwards years, a few good Mangini years. But by and large, you know, it's a disaster. There's a couple of good years with Parcells, but by and large, it's kind of a mess. So suggesting, like, I'd run there, we don't know that that's fixed. There's a good start with Saleh. It's a good hypothetical with the money and the draft pick. It's not fixed yet. Right. And I don't think just Deshaun Watson fixes it either.
Right, and that's why if Richard Sherman, because he played for Saleh in San Francisco as his defensive coordinator, said, hey, look, I think this guy's going to be a really good head coach, if that's where Deshaun Watson ended up wanting to go, I think that would be a good fit for him. I think that's a good leader. But just saying you should run on the first thing smoking out to New York to go play for the Jets, as you said, what world is this? What are we living in? Let's see this first.
Deshaun Watson, if it's the difference between the Jets and the Dolphins, but the Dolphins are a slam dunk, right? And some people have suggested that the Dolphins trade the number 3 pick and Tua Tagovailoa to the Texans. So then the Texans' starting cornerstone quarterback is going to be Tua, and they get their pick back, the number 3 pick, and the Dolphins get Tua, or I should say the Dolphins then get Deshaun Watson. And if you're Deshaun Watson, oh, hell yeah, you're going to a team that nearly made the playoffs already, all young players, a head coach that's already one of the most respected in the NFL. If I'm Richard Sherman and I say he should run to the Dolphins, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm in on that. Run to the Jets right now? Little premature. Little premature.
That being said, D.A., real quickly, if he runs to the Jets and you get the Sean Watson with the Jets and you get Miami good and get Buffalo good, that means a win for everybody because that means it's that much more impossible for Bill Belichick to right this ship in New England and win this division.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. There are Patriots fans that just believe, well, this was the anomaly year. We're out of the playoffs and we'll be back. And they're dealing for the first time in 21 years with not making the playoffs. The odds are you're not being back. I mean, you might make the playoffs as a wild card team or something like that, but the odds are that the Patriots are never going to be good again. I mean, I say never, like not for the foreseeable future. That division's going to be hard now, and you have to find a starting quarterback. So, sorry, you might as well be the Colts. You might as well be take your pick of the Jets. Take your pick of the teams that need to figure out the Niners. Like, that doesn't just happen. You've got to really hit on something, and everything has to break your way with the rest of your roster. I think this is the new reality for the Patriots, and I'm not crying about it, that's for sure. Andrew Bogish has your headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
D.A., good morning again. So it's certainly nice that 8th-ranked Houston avenged its only loss of the season last night, routing Tulsa 86-59. The Cougars had lost to the Golden Hurricane right after Christmas. It's also cool that Providence upset number 11 Creighton 74-70, sure, and that Georgia Tech took down number 20 Clemson 83-65. But none of those teams are 15-0.
Vaudrin at the top of the key. He'll fire a triple. Yes! 43-28. Now, wait a minute. The Eagles closing in on a 15-0 start to the year and 20 consecutive victories, up 43-28, 100 seconds into the second half.
Feeling good, doing well.
Oh, yes, they
wow.
are.
Chandler. That is Vaudrin. Great.
Yes.
Wow. Then now what?
Wait a minute.
And that one awesome. Actually works. Like, that one fits in the flow. That's a good one you yeah. could actually use, I think, game in and game out if you're stupid.
Now,
Dave.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
It fits a little bit better than asking, do they have good burgers and turkey?
True.
Well, the bigger question is, do they have good burgers?
Right.
Right.
These guys were like Abbott and Costello yesterday. So you had Dave Friedman, who's our Super Dave, and you had Mike Pacheco, who's his color analyst on the Winthrop basketball broadcast. They shoehorned every damn drop into that two-hour broadcast they possibly could, even if it made sense or not. They
right.
were all-stars.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Right.
And now wait a minute is perfect.
Now wait a minute.
I wish do we need... could have been in the production meeting as they right. kind of figured out where
exactly.
they're going to squeeze in some of these ones.
Exactly. That's where I need the behind-the-scenes Friedman bringing Pacheco the list and explaining to him what was going to happen on this broadcast. That's
how are
we
going to get good burgers in? How might you tell your turkey story and I'll ask if there's good burgers in Istanbul? Would that work?
What the hell does where does assault mean?
And it's not like, as you just said, it's not like this is a bad basketball team where they're just playing out the string for, you know,
right.
garbage season. They're 15-0. They're a perennial tournament team. These are big games and they're working in where does the salt go? And now wait a minute. And by the way, it gets more and more ridiculous. We're going to keep playing more of these drops throughout
yeah.
the show. I mean, by the end of this game, it is utter insanity what they are trying to pull off.
And this game, by the way, it was a 78-66 win over Presbyterian. So the Eagles are 15-0 overall. They're 12-0 in the Big South, and they've won 20 straight going back to last season. In the NBA, the T-Wolves had a two-point lead in the final seconds on the Magic, and they had Jared Vanderbilt at the line for two clinching free throws. He missed the first, and then...
His second shot is no good. Rebounded by Anthony. 2 seconds left. Anthony for the win.
Got
he
it!
Throws it! Cole Anthony gives the Magic a victory. Improbable.
David Steele on Magic Radio. Cole Anthony, buzzer beating three. And if you don't know, that's Greg Anthony's kid. Orlando stealing a 97-96 victory from the T-Wolves. The Nets lost their first game with Kyrie, Durant, and Harden. 147-135 in double OT in Cleveland. Colin Sexton scored 15 in that final period alone, 42 for the game. The Clipper win streak is 5 after a 115-96 decision over the Kings. Joel Embiid, 42 points and 10 boards, and the Sixers, 117-109, went over the... I wrote Bruins, but I think I meant Celtics. And the Mavs snapped the three-game slide, 124-112 in Indy. Kristaps Porzingis, 27 points and 12 boards. The NBA has reminded teams about the rules for in-game interactions, with COVID still a huge problem for the league. League security will now be at midcourt pregame and halftime to keep an eye on things. Players are limited to fist or elbow bumps, no high fives, no hugs, and only quick chats with opponents. Patrick Mahomes did basically everything at Chiefs practice yesterday, but officially just a limited participant because he remains in concussion protocol. And because they're the Bears recently interviewed Mike Singletary for defensive coordinator. He, of course, is one of their greats, but has not had an NFL job since 2016. Since then, he's been a failed Alliance coach and a failed high school coach. So let's bring him back to coach the Bears defense in 2022-1, whatever. Larry Scott is done as Pac-12 commissioner at the end of this June. His contract was to run through June of 2022. Veteran lefty Jay Happ reportedly signing with the Twins. And the NHL has fined the Washington Capitals $100,000 because four players hung out in a hotel room without masks. Alex Ovechkin was one of them. All four now on the team's COVID list. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. I want this very clear. I really respect Mike Singletary, okay? Mike Singletary's Hall of Fame linebacking career is one of the great in history. There is Butkus, there is Singletary, there is Urlacher. These are all-time Bears legends at linebacker. And not only is Singletary a Pro Football Hall of Famer and the linchpin of the 85 Bears defense, perhaps the greatest of all time, he's a College Football Hall of Famer. But as a coach, he's left a lot to be desired. And what happened, remember, Mraz, when we did the Alliance, it was Pete the Body, of course, who adopted the Memphis Express. And I believe it was because he liked the logo. Now, we based all of our decisions that year on the logos. I went Arizona Hotshots. You went Orlando Apollos. Pete went Memphis Express. And of course, Pete's luck, the Express turned into an absolute abject disaster. They are the embarrassment of the Alliance within the first 2 weeks of the season. And they are led by who else? Mike Singletary.
And as Bogus pointed out, I think the next 2 years he went to coach a high school, and I think won a combined one game over 2 years. You're Mike Singletary. It's high school. You can't win one game over 2 years.
Yay, football.
He was the head coach at Trinity Christian Academy, and I believe you're right. I believe he won one game in 2 years and had to resign.
They were 1-21. He couldn't even scare the other team into losing to his guys.
Stick to the card shows there, Mike.
And now the Bears are like, let's see what he's got. Let's see what he's thinking. So, Mike, tell us about Trinity Christian Homecoming 2019. What did you guys have going on right there? Do you think that'll help us against Aaron Rodgers or the Packers? Now, wait a minute, Mike Singletary.
Wait a minute.
I want to hear all about homecoming against Valley and how you guys lost 63-3.
Couldn't stop AC Slater.
So how did AC Slater run 7 onside kicks successfully in a row on you guys to beat you by 60 points in that game, Mike? When we come back here on the show, why did the Chiefs flip, as AB just mentioned in the update, on Mahomes' status yesterday? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS. It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Thanks for being with us, everybody. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And remember, you can always watch the best of the show every single day on YouTube. If you miss anything and want to watch it again, the best clips of the day available on YouTube every single day. Go to our CBS Sports Radio page on YouTube, and you'll find all of the daily briefings, if you will, from the Da. We're all looking for a little tell, a little sign, when it comes to Patrick Mahomes and his status for Sunday's game. I really believe that's the difference between who wins on Sunday. If Mahomes plays and is 100%, Chiefs are going to win. They're a better football team. They've been here. They're at home. They've got all those weapons. If it's Chad Henne, I think the Bills are going to their Super Bowl. So I don't think it has to be much more complicated than that. I don't think the differential between the two is that huge. And I think the difference of the greatest quarterback on the planet right now and Chad Henne is enough to put the Bills over the top. Mahomes was listed yesterday as a full participant in practice when the Chiefs initially released their practice report. The team later revised his status to limited, saying it is not allowed to list him as full because he remains in concussion protocol. We went over this in detail yesterday. There's five steps that Mahomes needs to go through, work through, before he is fully cleared by independent doctors to be eligible to play. He can go through limited practice, but the independent doctors have to observe him and then tell Andy Reid and the Chiefs whether he is good to go for Sunday. So this is something that is likely going to go on throughout the week. It is Thursday today. I don't expect us to get a hard and fast call on this until Saturday night. I really don't. And maybe even Sunday morning. I think they're going to continue to take this very slowly and then wait and see on Saturday or on Sunday morning where Mahomes is. But he's first got a clear protocol. And if he fails any of the protocol, he goes back to step one. So what does this mean? I think, as I've said all week, the Chiefs are very optimistic he will play. And if this is not a concussion and instead a nerve injury in the back of his neck, then I think they feel as though that is manageable and that they feel very certain that he's going to be able to play on Sunday. So my guess is this is the dance behind the scenes. My thought is the Chiefs feel optimistic, but they can't get ahead of themselves publicly because they can't show their cards to the public or to the NFL about this. They need to take this really conservatively. They need to show a sensitivity to it, and they need to follow all the proper protocol because, let's face it, the entire football world is watching for this injury. If this is a backup offensive lineman, the status of is he fully listed? Is he partially listed? Is he a full participant? What stage is he in? It doesn't matter. Nobody's going to be asking that question, and they can just kind of do whatever they want to do without fear of this incredible scrutiny on it. But I think this is a sign of they're optimistic. Mahomes is passing all the protocols. They think he's going to play on Sunday, but then they realize, oh, we've got to make it sound like this, or we've got to follow this to the letter of the law here. And in this case, because he's in concussion protocol, he literally can't be listed as a full participant. He has to be listed as limited because by virtue of the protocol, he's not allowed to participate in everything. But it makes me think that they look at him as, yeah, he's going to play on Sunday. And you can't quite do that until we get to Sunday. Mraz, how do you read this?
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are going full steam ahead here, and I think they are trying to tell us without being non-sensitive to the issue that they think Mahomes is going to play. And I think the only thing that would scare me away is what Tim Grunhardt actually said yesterday. There is always that chance Mahomes wakes up Sunday morning with some kind of headache or anything and throws everything out for a loop.
When we come back, we'll talk about the difference between Mahomes in there and Mahomes not in there with a guy that's been in four of these AFC Championship games for the Buffalo Bills. Steve Tasker, the NFL on CBS, one of the greats in Bills history, is going to join us coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.